Jennifer calls him.
The Committee on Rules Administration will come to order.
Where is he now? Is he up there?
We have three or four items we want to cover today. Why don't we start with Senator Sharon's honorary internship for persons with disabilities proposal. And there are also some handouts on the budget in your packet. You might want to start with that, because that's kind of the major topic today. Senator Sharon?
Have you received this?
Got it. Mm-hmm.
It's on the. It's called Capital Fellowship Program. We did.
It's in the packet.
It's in the packet.
Yes, Capital Fellowship Program.
Thank you very much for a chance to get in front of you this summer on this this project that I've been working on for a while, and it is an idea to have persons with disabilities to be able to have internships here at the Capitol with senators who might have an interest in having a person with a learning disability have an internship with them. And that was the initial kind of conceptual idea that on a voluntary basis that senators would engage in this program. But in my conversation with Maureen Gustafson from Minnesota Works, the idea really expanded, and we were able to provide some additional supports, and I'll have Maureen talk with you about that. So as you can see from the handout, the purpose of the program is to have the Senate become more visible in providing persons with disabilities an opportunity to demonstrate their capacities in a public way by participating in the work that's performed here at the Capitol. And also, we want to have a program that gives recognition to persons with disabilities for their hard work and for their participation in community-based work. So what we've put in front of you here, we're calling it the Capital Fellowship Program. You might say, where did that name come from? Well, we started out with an internship name, but it got confused with the regular internship program. So we're seeking a name for this program. We're not married to that name yet, but it's the concept of a program that is like an internship, honorary internship for persons with some disabilities. Minnesota Works, through Maureen Gustafson's work, is going to do is utilize some of their resources to give an hourly wage to the persons engaged in the internship. So unlike our internship program where the senators make a payment to an intern, this intern's hours will be paid through Minnesota Works. And all of the coordination and the supervision of the persons who are selected for this program will be covered under a coach provided by Minnesota MinWorks. Anticipate in this proposal that MinWorks will do the participant selection, that MinWorks will provide a coach on the Capitol grounds to be able to help facilitate the process and coordinate the process, that the compensation of $9 an hour will be a stipend paid by MinWorks, that all liability and workman's compensation issues related for the job coaches and the participants will be provided by the resource centers that are sponsoring that particular intern. The transportation will be provided to the person back and forth through MinWorks. As you can see from the handout, I've tried to identify what we are proposing would be our Senate's contribution to this project, what our responsibilities would be, and then to clarify what Minnesota Works' responsibilities would be, and just an overview of what we anticipate our implementation process to be. This is a voluntary process. What I would do is send out an email to the senators describing this program to them and asking if they would be interested in participating. There is a limit to the number of persons that would be able to participate because of MinWorks has some limitation in terms of the amount of money. It's limited to 4 hours per week, the same day, the same 4 hours every week in order to coordinate the job coach in the supervisory process. Initially, you might ask why this is in front of you. Initially, the idea that we were talking about would have been simply an internship directed in the same way that the internship program is for other interns in the Senate. But after talking and working with MinWorks, in order to conceptualize how would we be able to do this, it shifted and became a project that MinWorks could support and provide supervision for. Because that added element is there, we thought that it would be important to bring it in front of this committee to make certain that this is in keeping with the concerns that the Senate would have. And that's just a general overview. Maureen Gustafson is here. I'd ask her to join me here. She's from MinWorks and would answer any questions that you might have.
Hi, thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, you mentioned it just in one at one spot that it's just people with learning disabilities, no other disabilities, or is it limited to people with learning disabilities?
It's a broader disability range than that. I'm sorry, and physical disabilities.
Okay. Thank
you. What kind of work would be envisioned being done in the Senate offices, or?
They could do a variety of clerical activities.
For the tape, just say who you are.
I'm Maureen Gustafson with MinWorks. And whole correlation, creating binders, delivering messages, doing handouts, numerous kinds of clerical. Some have basic data entry ability. They could do some typing, errands.
Okay. So not research necessarily, right?
No.
For some of them.
Thank you. I think that, as you'll see, that we want to do a follow-up after one trial effort at this to sort of figure out what was possible, what did we learn. We have to be able to find work that is within the capacity of the person. If there's a learning disability, if it's a physical disability, there's a number of skills that a person could do, and it might include some research if the person is really dealing primarily with a physical disability. But the idea would be that the senator who sponsors the intern would have some sense with the job coach of what the range of abilities are and then finding those things to do. It may be putting together, like for me at the end of the session, I try to put together some envelopes of letters to young people who are graduating from high school. It's a labor-intensive job that certainly we've used interns to support in the past would be within this person's capacity. They might be able to bring some things to my legislative assistant needs to leave her desk often to bring things to me, I'm asking for, that certainly an intern would be able to do. I think that what it is that we might be able to offer may be greater than we actually think, and that's what the experiment is about, is to recognize that the capacity of the special community may be greater than we thought of, and it forces us to think about how we might integrate this diverse population into our capital, not just into our Senate offices, but maybe into some of the other offices, printing offices and other offices that could use some support services within their ability.
So financially, the bottom line is that this would not cost the Senate anything other than some supervisory time. Mr. Magnuson and the participating offices. So that seems like a pretty good deal. So I think what we need from the Rules Committee is really just a sense of whether this is something that we should try to go ahead with for a pilot this coming session and see how this could work out. Senator Sharon has done all the work. This seems pretty straightforward to me. I would be inclined to do it. But Senator Bourbon?
Well, I think it's a good idea. You know, one of the things that my division struggles with is trying to get more people with disabilities into work. There is oftentimes a great misconception about what people with disabilities can do, and oftentimes people with disabilities can do way more than most people think. And it's an important part of everyone's life to be able to contribute through working. And so I think it's a good idea.
That's the philosophy behind the program.
Senator, are you ready for that? I don't know, Mr. Watson. I think we're just trying to get a sense, or do you think what do you think makes most sense here? I think we could implement this just administratively, and I just kind of want to get a sense of the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's important for the committee members and the senators to know that there is this program and to understand its relationship to the ongoing internship program. Whether you need to vote on it or not, I'm not sure. But I think the Rules Committee members need to understand, and the members of the Senate need to understand the relationship of this to the regular internship program, because they're not the same.
Senator Fredrickson, if the sense of the committee is that we should proceed here, I think we just ask Senator Sharon to do some more work, and then we'll make sure that we do kind of get in writing kind of the differences here and just let Senator Sharon proceed and see how things go.
Mr. Chairman, I certainly support the initiating this program, and I would hope we would approve it for the 2010 legislative session and perhaps 1 month of the interim, the following interim, so that if there's mailings or work to be done in the office afterwards, that these folks could be helpful doing, that would be authorized. Rather than just say the 2010 session, that would indicate that the session adjourned, they would be through. I'd like to see them have at least another month.
Senator Sharon, I'm going to ask a question. I probably should know the answer. Funding for MinWorks comes from where?
We have a $300,000 stimulus package that the sole initiative is to assist people with disabilities in obtaining employment. A portion of that is educating the public at large of the capabilities of people with disabilities. And so we want to express that it's not traditional work that you think of, but they're also very capable of doing data entry and digital imaging and a variety of high-tech jobs that normally people don't associate. And so this is a whole awareness campaign as well, and also to honor these people for doing good jobs in their existing jobs in their communities.
But this proposal is not dependent on stimulus money. This was an idea you were working on.
Definitely. This was in our program of work. We also have funding through DEED.
Through DEED?
Yes.
And so that comes out of Thomasone. So there's a mm-hmm. there's a budget that Senator
yes. 3-year budget.
Had. You know about the program that right. works? Does this sound like this is something that could work in the Senate?
I think, Mr. Chairman, I think it's worth a try. See how it goes. And, it could provide these people some opportunity to get a letter of reference or something on their resume that could be valuable to them moving forward, I think.
How are you doing?
It's just really too bad that so oftentimes we judge people's abilities by their appearances and the way they present themselves. We had a young man come and testify to our committee when we were creating the MA program for people with disabilities, the employed persons with disabilities program where people can work and still get their medical assistance. And he could hardly talk. I mean, he was shaking, he had different body spasms, he could hardly talk. And yet he was one of the most productive and capable computer programmers that had ever existed in the state of Minnesota. And, he had a job, and he was very well paid, and yet, because of his disabilities, he couldn't get health insurance through a job. And so that's why we created that program for employed persons with disabilities in the MA program. And so I just really caution people to, as much as you can, kind of curb your preconceptions about what people can do, because people can oftentimes do way more than you would think they could do.
Mm-hmm. Senator Pogue-Miller.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I think Senator Berglund is speaking to the essential reasons for which I'm really encouraging this program, because not only is this an opportunity for those persons involved in Minnesota Works, where persons with disabilities are finding work in the in community-based rather than sheltered workshops, moving out into the community. This is an opportunity, as Senator Berglund has been advocating for many years, to get us aware of the competencies and the abilities, and that by bringing this program into the Senate, we begin to modify our preconceived ideas and notions about what people can and cannot do based on a disability or something that makes us think that the person might not have any capacities because of one narrow limitation. So that's part of the goal of this, to change us, to change the state system, to open its doors more to various groups of people to be employed, to help us see what the possibilities are, along with the goal of giving some recognition to people who have made a strong effort in their workplace through this honorary kind of internship.
Any cautions, members? It sounds like the sense of the committee is to have Senator Sharon keep progressing here and try to do this for the upcoming session. Any cautions from anybody that they want to? The difference between the internship program would be important, and it's volunteer. No member is going to have to do anything they want to do.
It will be restricted by the number of senators willing to sponsor somebody.
But we could potentially have someone who's not with a senator also, right? We could potentially have somebody who's in one of our other offices.
We're open to that. So I can be clear. We need to move forward in terms of getting various parts of the state to offer the names for MinWorks to select for the internship, getting coaches set up for this. So we will proceed and make those efforts. It expends MinWorks resources, so I don't want to push them forward.
Senator Fredrickson moves that the Senate prepare to participate in the MinWorks program this coming legislative session. And
plus a month.
And we add a month for our regular interns.
Did you find out where?
And we... We'll do whatever administratively is necessary to make that possible, and Scott Magnuson will be the point person. So. Does that sound good for members?
Okay, on that motion, has Scott...
You said prepare. I mean, aren't we just going to go ahead and do it?
Yes.
Okay.
Scott, you have been in on these discussions, correct? And this is doable from your perspective?
Yes.
And it can be separate from the internship program in a way that works?
Yes.
Okay. So we have a willing participant in Mr. Magnuson, too. So, okay, on the Fredrickson motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Why don't we do this appointment to the State County Results Accountability and Service Delivery Design. Did you have a chance to check with Senator Rosen?
By voicemail.
Okay, so Senator Senjum moves that Senator Berglund and Senator Rosen be appointed to the State County Results Accountability and Service Delivery Redesign Council. Members, this is kind of the continuation of that whole discussion last session about redesign at the county level. And apparently did we ever decide if this was in the tax bill or in the human service bill?
It was in our bill.
It was in the human service bill?
And it was one of these deals where the House wanted a pretty watered down version that the counties were supporting, and the governor didn't support that, and so the Senate played the role of trying to bring the two parties closer together.
And for some reason, the language said the Rules Committee rather than the Subcommittee on Committees. So we did talk about it in the Subcommittee on Committees. Senator Bach, there was something in the tax bill. Everybody was all confused, so I apparently this is different than what was ever in the tax bill?
Yes.
This has
yes.
nothing to do with levies. It has to do with counties merging their administrative and other functions and what accountability there will be for that and how fast that will happen, et cetera.
And Berglund and Rosen appear to be the correct people in the Senate who have worked on this. So on the Senate motion for Berglund and Rosen, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Okay, Senate budget. Ms. Zoff. Members, please view this as a beginning or a continuation of a more open process on the Senate budget. And so what we're trying to do here is figure out what kind of information the committee would like in front of it, and how can Ms. Zoff be helpful in trying to allow you to understand the Senate budget and help us with regards to decisions about the Senate budget. Ms. Zoff.
Mr. Chairman, members, I believe you have a number of documents in your materials there. A couple of them are, there is one that is the latest installment of the quarterly expenditure reports that's required to be given to members of the Rules Committee.
That looks like this.
That's right. That lists all of the expenditures for the quarter that just closed. And we will be presenting that to the Rules Committee every 3 months from now on. That's due every 3 months. So I believe we gave you one 3 months ago, and this is the latest. if you have any questions on that, that's not directly related to the budget presentation for today, but that'll give you some information on where we're at right now. And then you do have information on the category descriptions and budget highlights. When we last did a report to the committee, there was a request for a little bit more description on what kinds of specific expenditures are included within some of these categories. And that's a document that looks like this. This has got some text that is more descriptive of the types of expenditures that are included there. You also have information on the amounts that are proposed to be included in the Minnesota Senate budget for the upcoming, for the biennium that we've just entered. And there's one document that shows you the proposed budget for 2010 and 11, and then there's another that's printed sideways that compares these expenditures amounts to the amounts that were budgeted for the
those two
for the previous biennium. So you'll see where adjustments have been made over the last 2 years' budget.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Buck.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Zoff, the budget for 8 and budget for 9, are those actual expenditures, or was that the amount we budgeted? Is that number any different?
Mr. Chair, Senator Buck, those amounts are the appropriation amounts. It's on that document. So this is for comparison of the appropriated amounts.
Not of the actual expended amount.
That's correct.
We should probably get that, too.
Sure. Yeah, Mr. Chair, we can pull together what has been set forth in the quarterly expenditure amounts and provide you with an annual accounting of that. They're expecting that the final numbers on that will be available about mid-August.
Okay.
So as soon as that's available, we can just get that out to all the members of the committee. I think maybe the most, the best illustration of the changes and the amounts that have been allocated might be in this comparison, the sideways page. And just by way of background, what we've been looking at over the last several months in terms of anticipating a substantial hit to the Senate budget, to put it in context, one of the things you struggle with is that well over 80% of the Senate budget is personnel costs. And we have very few programs, we have very few expenditures for things other than people that we can cut. So it's really been a struggle to try to absorb, you know, as you can see, nearly a 5% cut from the appropriation of the previous biennium without doing a lot of damage to the people here. But we have been looking at, you know, necessarily where the money is with salaries. Clearly, the new budget is based on no increases in salaries, no promotions or step increases for the next 2 years. We have eliminated some of the functions in the Senate. The word processing operation is no longer going to be there, and the publications department is eliminated as well. That was 3 full-time positions and 2 temporary positions going forward. So we're in the process of redistributing the work that those people did and, you know, making arrangements for other staff people to pick up the work that had been done by those people. In some instances, we won't be able to provide all the functions. There won't be a Senate briefly anymore. You know, there will be some other things that will go by the wayside because we simply can't afford to continue to provide them. So, you know, there will be some noticeable changes when we make the cuts that we've made.
Implement the cuts that have been made.
Yes. Just by way of a little history, I looked back. In 2000, the Senate had 232 full-time employees. At the beginning of the session this year, we had 215, and now we're down to 205. And, you know, we're continuing to maintain, in effect, the freeze on hiring that was adopted that'll be in effect until January. So that is why we've been able to reduce the number of the full-time people on the payroll since the beginning of session. You know, and we are keeping tabs on attrition. We're keeping tabs on the number of people who are applying for voluntary unpaid leaves of absence. That helps us to save money as we go along. So all of these, you know, anticipated expenditures are a little bit of a moving target because we're, you know, we're trying to take into account the savings, whatever we can garner from people who are voluntarily leaving or taking some time off. So that's helpful to the budget as we go forward. Some of the other big cost-saving enterprises that we've had, we are going to be using a new form of software for payroll and accounts receivable, and I think we owe a big debt to the people in the fiscal services office and the SIS office who've been implementing this. It's a lot of work to, you know, go to a whole new software system for payroll and for the accounts receivable, but that will probably save us about $200,000 a year. We also had changed our phone system to the voice over internet phone system, and that's saving us about $100,000 a year going forward. The new budget is based on a very dramatic decrease in expenditures for equipment. We have kind of a minimal budgeted amount that is trying to at least anticipate, you know, some equipment breaking down or some necessary replacements, but we won't have nearly the kinds of expenditures we've had for any kind of equipment as we go forward in this two-year period. There's also an elimination of any kind of reimbursement for out-state travel or out-of-state travel, which will save money going forward. We had kind of an unanticipated piece of good news, and that is that there will be no increase in health insurance premiums for this year. We had been anticipating an increase, and that probably won't happen this year. Next year's will increase at a little bit more than the rate we'd expected, but at least there is some savings in the first year here. When you look at the comparison sheet, you will see that there have been substantial decreases in the salary numbers there for staff, and that is due to reduction in the number of staff. There are a couple of instances on the list there where you'll see some large percentage increases. One I would point out is the repair and maintenance category. That came about because when we got the one-time technology money in 2008, we did purchase a lot of equipment, and the equipment came typically with a one-year warranty. That warranty period has now expired, so we're having to switch into service agreements or maintenance contracts, and those have been quite expensive, although we did go for maybe a less expensive option in some of those to the extent we could to save some money. There is also a large percentage increase in capital outlay, but you'll see it's still a very small number. That is typically used after an election if people are moving offices or committees are being reconfigured, so there are some essentially construction expenses there. Those, I think, are the main elements in the changes in the budget. You know, as I mentioned, we did take a nearly 5% cut in the outright appropriation, and I should point out that we also had two instances in the last couple of years where we've given back substantial amounts of money. One was $710,000 and one was $800,000. So the Senate has been in the process of reducing expenditures wherever it can. No more free Kleenex or paper plates, and just the little things on up to the big things. Maintaining those vacancies has been very helpful. It's maybe been a little bit less attrition than we would anticipate in a normal year, and I think that's a function of the job market being pretty poor, that people are not as likely to be leaving as they might have otherwise. But still, we're hoping for the best here.
Questions? Senator Cohen.
On some of the line items, if you could just offer a little bit of explanation, because we've talked about the elimination of staff positions. So what's the, what are, what would we be doing with services for the 53,000?
Services, let's see. We had had in that category, there were employment ads, microfilming, chaplains, consultants, the audit, and staff training expenditures. We did reduce the frequencies of the audits. We plan to reduce the frequencies of the audits from annual to bi, to every 2 years, and that was roughly $21,000 a year.
Are we allowed to do that?
Yes.
Apparently the House does it every 2 years.
Normally, with accounting practices, you look for an audit on a yearly basis. So is there a statutory requirement that we have an audit every 2 years, but by practice we've been doing it every year?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, I don't know that. We have been, the practice has been to do it every year for, I can't remember what the history is or how long we've been doing it that way, but.
Okay, Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, no, there is no statutory requirement. The Senate decided to start doing audits sometime, might have been
1970s, I believe.
Late 70s. So we began at that time doing it every year. And as I understand it, I was not involved in this proposal, but as I've heard, when you audit only every other year, you're not skipping the years that, you know, you're just taking a look back for 2 years instead of taking a look back 1 year. Okay. Is that correct?
Right.
And then, Mr. Chairman, on the video photo, it talks about a deferral of any capital investments. And that's what is represented by the $234,000. There have been projected...
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, yes, as you can see, in 08 and 09, there were substantial investments in those types of equipment. And our hope is that we're just going to maintain what we absolutely have to over the next biennium. I mean,
he was asking about video photo, the one above
right,
that.
Yeah. Right.
That's what she said.
That's what I'm looking at.
Yeah, but how can you have a 234 reduction when you only had a 135?
Mr. Chair, that's the biennial. It was 135 per year, less eight, and it's down to 18 per year. But I think, Mr. Chair and Senator Cohen, that's a really important point to keep in mind with this budget in general, that this budget is really cutting expenditures that we typically on an ongoing mode we would be investing in, you know, this type of equipment, in computer equipment, in all kinds of things that make the Senate work. And this budget is cutting that pretty much to the bone. So this will help us to get over this two-year period. But I think a lot of the cuts that we've taken here are not going to be tenable going on into the future. We're going to have to figure out some way that, you know, there will be more investments in the future. And so that's something to really grapple with as we go on.
So, Mr. Chairman, as an example, that fancy new scoreboard we have on the same floor better not break down. The one that shows pictures and stuff. As an example.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, another thing to keep in mind is that some of the repair and maintenance and the service contracts, those are intended to provide some kind of service for those as we go on. But, yes, I mean.
Unless we have equipment that has some kind of warranty, we mm-hmm. don't have some trouble with maintenance and deferral of maintenance.
Right.
And Mr. Chairman, Ms. Off, let me just ask them relative to the staff. I don't know if we've had discussion, but this assumes, I haven't heard that this is happening other places in state government. Maybe it is, but I haven't heard of that at this point. This assumes we're not looking, at least as of today, to furloughs or partial weeks or anything of that sort right now.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, this doesn't specify anything of that sort, but I think it's fair to say everything is on the table, depending on what happens going forward. I think the whole situation is very fluid in terms of what our expenditures are, what we may have to cut in the future.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I want to get into that, but at least where we are right now, if we assume that there is no further deficit, if we assume that hypothetically, you're comfortable with where we are in terms of the staff situation right now, assuming no further deficit.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, this budget, the staff salary amounts that are in here right now, assume a certain amount of vacancies and attritions,
yes,
and voluntary leaves and that sort of thing. Right. There's no particular number in this that deals with furloughs.
Okay. And then finally, Mr. Chairman, let's just say hypothetically, because we know what we face next year, there's some talk of attempting to reinstate the governor's veto of the GAMC monies, which is similar ones, what, $300 million roughly?
Well, with the unallotment, it got to be more.
Okay. And if we assume on top of that, there's some additional deficit, and, you know, pick a number, are there any contingency plans looking to the end of the biennium?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, we've looked at a number of options, and furloughs is certainly one of those options. Reducing the number of temporary staff for next session is another possibility. You know, there are all kinds of options out there that we've looked at and that we've got numbers to work with if we go forward, if there are other changes.
Okay.
Senator Bott? Well, Mr. Chairman, let me expressed my continued interest in the idea of some kind of a early retirement incentive. You know, the Senate passed a bill on that. It cost the general fund some money for the agencies, but it actually saved the Senate a little bit of money. I don't think we need legislation for that, but you know, we've got some long-term employees here that I think if they had some kind of a health insurance incentive, might go. And I think if we look forward into the next biennium, we are going to have to figure out who we run the Senate on less people. I mean, we're a people thing. And I don't feel a bit bad about the idea of offering a long-term Senate employee that maybe was here 30 years and eligible for retirement an additional year of health insurance if it helps them build the bridge to early retirement and saves the Senate some significant money because those people are all at the top end of the salary scale. And even if we did replace them, there's still significant savings there. But, I mean, I'm just looking at the next biennium. I mean, honestly, we're going to all have to figure out how we do with less. You can't. Just where we are.
Senator Berger?
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to get a little bit more information about what the tuition and training expenditures involves.
Mr.
The larger category of services, but it's listed on this sheet.
Eileen Munzer, Fiscal Services. The tuition, we haven't paid anyone's tuition in many years. It's just part of the object code that we call it, tuition and training. Training would be, the professional development that we send some of our people to, legislative assistance at the Hubert Humphrey Institute this past year, that type of thing.
Well, I guess my suggestion would be that we take a look at that item, maybe. Certainly.
That's been on the menu.
Mr. Chair.
You should put on.
We had that category had been for use of some training that had been done for committee administrators and legislative assistants. And in this budget crunch that we're facing, basically those training sessions have been eliminated. There's a small amount of money that is still budgeted, but it is designated as far as from a staff standpoint for CLE training. It also had included some things like our professional training that our nonpartisan staff needs for licensing and computer people, the SIS people with some of the new systems that we've put in place and some of our new programs, that software programs we're implementing. Those right now are the only things that we will be looking to fund next year, are things that are either used for professional licensure, CLE credits and that sort of thing, as well as the training for the computer people, for the SIS people, and some of the fiscal office if there's additional things that have to be done to implement the new software programs. I think we all agree with you that, you know, in these times we just don't have, some of those other things have been good and they're beneficial, but we just don't have the budget to do them.
Sam Bergel?
I guess I was just responding. This sheet says training category has been increased to provide staff necessary training opportunities, and this one that's the highlights.
It's on the category descriptions and highlights and under services. The last sentence says the training category has been increased to provide staff necessary training opportunities.
Mm-hmm. And so maybe that's just incorrect on the sheet.
I think that might have been an earlier version. Yeah. Because this is,
yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it was especially as helpful as the training could have been for the LAs anyway, so the fact that we're losing it is not a huge loss, I don't believe.
So, Bergen, you got a little baggage on that one.
Well, I mean, if something isn't very helpful and it takes people out of the office, you know, maybe we shouldn't be doing
it. Anything else? Other questions by members?
Mr. Chairman, one quick question. Ms. Zoffney, on fiscal year 10 and 11, the bottom line number is $22,269,000. Is that the appropriation?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, yes, that is the appropriation.
All of it.
So we do have some one-time money carryover here. That'll be reconciled at the end of the quarter somehow.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we do have an amount that will be added to the Senate carry forward. It's somewhat under $800,000, which amounts to a little less than, it's 0.017% of the budget. So, you know, it's cutting it pretty close, but that will be added to the carry forward.
Senator Central.
Mr. Chair, and Ms. And maybe you conveyed this, and I just haven't understood. But as we look at our Senate appropriation coming out of the session, and I have this vague recollection about needing to make $3 million of cuts, and maybe that's not correct. But so I guess my question is: Are we on target, if you will, at this point to meet our budget over the next biennium, or is there going to be a day during this biennium when we have to make additional cuts based on our budget, at least?
Mr. Chair, Senator Senjum, the allocation of the amounts that we have done in this sheet, if there are no unanticipated changes or additional cuts or givebacks, you know, we should be able to
get us there.
That should get us there.
Okay, thank you.
Keep in mind, though, that means no enhancement pay. And we had a substantial financial savings by going to the joint Secretary of the Senate option. So, I mean, there are some things here that we have to kind of think through. I mean, I think the point Senator Bach has made is the correct point to be made. We absolutely have to figure out a way to bring our overall base level down. And since that's mostly people costs,
we need to be thinking about things like being careful about committee structure and stuff, because that's what drives costs. To the extent that we have elaborate committee structure, that puts us in a position of having to have that kind of infrastructure around the committees. And so I don't think anybody has a proposal right now, but I think as we go into the reorganization of the Senate after the next election, we need to be thinking about kind of our base level expenditure, and that is the committee structure, I think. Senator Sengem's shaking his head. The others are going, don't go there, Larry. But
well, Sarah, I know Urban, that it's true.
Do we have 23 committees or something like that?
Mr. Chair, Senator, when I first became a budget chair, we had four budget chairs, and then K through 12 was sort of separate. So that was five. How many have we got now?
11.
You know, we probably shouldn't go back to five, but it kind of seems to me when we reorganize, particularly if there's some attrition there, that we could cut that budget chairs numbers by several. I don't know, two or three or something.
Wasn't my idea.
Well, it's my idea.
No, I mean to have 10.
Oh, okay.
How many would you like to have, Senator Cohen?
I had argued for 6.
Okay.
Plus capital investment.
So 7.
7, correct.
Well, except capital investment isn't really a division.
Not a division of finance.
No, it's not.
Well, we did, you know, we have reduced from where we were. When Senator Wieger suggested we consolidate with Senator Stumps, we did reduce a committee. And that did create a savings.
And we and combined, went back to the old judiciary committee.
Yes. So some things have been done, but I think Senator Lanksa does point out the point. Mr. Watson's not looking at me because he's on that finance side. Bach and Pogonola, we're tax side. We're finance committee people who seem to have a lot of organization. But
now, Mr. Chairman, if I could just say that I also think that when you get budget divisions that have, you know, fairly small budgets, that it makes it difficult for them when they have to cut their budgets, because they don't have room to move something from here to there very much. And I think we saw that this year. So I don't think we're going to be spending money next biennium. I think we're still going to be in the same ugly place we're at now. So
actually, the projections are worse. We're going to be worse off than we were when we started. So.
Well, that's my point. Maybe having some of these smaller divisions that don't have very much wiggle room isn't doing them any favor, really.
Okay, any type of information that more than this that members of the Rules Committee would like Ms. Zoff to be considering producing for us to kind of help you think through all this?
Mr. Chairman, what monies have been allocated to the committees for our interim committee work? How much money is...
I don't think we've done anything there, have we? Other than, I don't think we've really done anything other than you can't travel, really.
Committees have budgets, though.
We really don't.
Okay, no. That's,
we have in the past.
We have in the past, but we do not now.
On the other hand, there is...
For the tape, you should...
Yes.
You need to identify yourself.
Michelle Kelm. We definitely have budgeted and have been working with committee chairs on interim hearings. I mean, to the extent that we need to be doing this work, the work of the Senate. The one thing I think that we pretty clearly have done or tried to do is to preserve the dollars in the budget for the work of the Senate, whether, you know, obviously in terms of of employees in terms of kind of the core work of the Senate, as well as committee work around the state if it takes, you know, for interim committees. We have not, we talked about committee budgets. That's always one of those things that people think of it initially as being a way to kind of control costs, but in a sense what it really does is then chairs start thinking they have to spend the money if they have a committee budget. It almost, you know, they feel required then to take that money and spend it. On the other hand, we've made it clear as we've been talking with committee chairs that the priority is bonding committee. There, we're going to be doing the work of the bonding committee. On the other hand, we've also been meeting with staff to talk about anything that can be done to try to, you know, limit the amount of time for mileage and reimbursement in hotels. If we can try to consolidate stops, you know, try to save some money along the way, we would do that as well. But obviously, the bonding trips are really important, so that continues. There are many committees that have things that they're doing or have planned, but in general, I think everyone's trying to be very careful about how money is spent so that we can conserve the resources. But so there isn't specifically money budgeted, but we obviously have talked with committee chairs and have talked through kind of what their plans are, and I think Aaron has kind of kept a sense of what's coming and how that affects the budget.
Thank you.
I think some clarification on travel. We have not provided any travel for anybody for a long time. We have provided non-travel day per diem for a few members who have paid their own way to things, and on the non-travel days, we've
travel days.
We've provided per diem for the travel days, not for the non-travel days. So 2 days potentially we've paid per diem for a few members. Mr. Watson just made a speech at NCSL, and I mean, it's kind of embarrassing to say this, but he basically paid his own way out there. I mean, that's where we're at. I don't think that's a good situation. I mean, he was there as a national resource. He's one of the experts in the country on this particular area that he spoke on. And we were not able to provide payment for that, which is just kind of... And the alternative to that is what Senator Bach has pointed out. The alternative is we're going to have to bring our overall cost structure down more. And I think we need to do that. So... we're looking for suggestions, and I think we should be all looking for suggestion opportunities to do that in the Senate. So. Ms. Zoff, thank you. You've been doing a great job considering the tightness of the budget and the stress that provides internally. I think you've, because of your hard work and keeping in contact with people, have really kept the kind of stress and kind of difficult conversations around the Senate to a minimum. I think the committee wants to recognize your work on that. You've done a really good job in making this easier for everybody. Thank you. Okay, anything else for today? Do we anticipate another Rules Committee meeting when?
Not, there's nothing on the radar.
So several months at least, I would think. I should, I don't know if members noticed, I've set in motion a meeting with former governors and former majority leaders and former speakers, probably sometime in September. It's a group of about 15 to 18 people, I believe.
Who's proposing that, did you say?
I proposed it. The speakers agreed to do it. And the intent is to, the format for it has not been determined, but the intent is to provide nonpartisan information to these people and then seek their advice on how to proceed. Because we have a projected, I think members do know, we have a projected, depending on how you count it, we have a projected $6 to $7 billion deficit in the next biennium now. Which is a problem. Now, we're talking about the one after the one we're just going to finish here. And we have to start to do something about that now, I think. So, Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, does that list of invitees include former finance commissioners? I mean, I've thought maybe that's a role for the tax committee. I don't know, but I...
Sir, Buck, I'm sorry, I missed that.
Does the list of invitees include former state finance commissioners? I've thought that the tax committee maybe would consider having former revenue or finance commissioners in, but don't want to duplicate anything that...
There's been nothing at the staff level yet. These were invitations to former elected people, former speakers, majority leaders, and governors. And what is that number again? And current majority leaders, speakers, and governors. Is that 19 or 18? Yeah, I forget. But, you know, it goes back, Rod Searle. So it includes Governor Cui, Governor Ventura, Governor Carlson, Governor Plenty. And what I was thinking, I'm open to advice on this, what I was thinking was we would have those former finance commissioners and perhaps some of the revenue commissioners help us put together the information for people to review. Because it's meant to be totally nonpartisan or non-generational. Just what kind of information should we be thinking about here in terms of trying to work our way through this in the coming years? So, Senator Bach, I former revenue commissioners would be fine. Well, there was no invitation to them to participate, right. But they would be resource people.
I think, Mr. Chairman, it would be helpful to call on former finance or revenue commissioners for some thoughts going forward. This is going to be a paramount challenge. I think most people don't understand it. Mr. Chairman, just a little data from the tax side so that people get their arms around the challenge of that $6 or $7 billion problem, because I've heard House members speak about, and frankly some candidates for governor speak about, well, if the rich were just paying their fair share. So just a little information for you so you understand the depth of the problem. The House is talking about the $300,000 income level, that if we had a fourth tier there, we could skin this cat. So I had our tax staff run the number for me. If you did a fourth tier at $400,000 in household income and you plugged in the highest income tax rate in the country, which is Hawaii, at 11%, which would be a 40% tax increase on those people, you can raise about $1 billion for the biennium. $1 billion out of what is certain to be about a $6 billion problem. So I think we all got to recognize the fact that the tax committee is going to participate in solving this problem in the next biennium, but it is way beyond their capacity. So I think some help from former finance or revenue commissioners that we all should think about that going forward as to what their observations are about the state's challenges.
Senator Bach, this is all in the early stages, but I was going to ask for suggestions and make our professional staff available to these invitees. The idea was to basically get four or five former finance commissioners together and have them help prepare a packet of information or tell us what should be in that so that these participants would have an information base from which to think about the situation and offer their suggestions and thoughts on it. And obviously revenue commissioners could help with that. Former revenue commissioners could help with that too. So I'm absolutely open to suggestions on this from members. Senator Senjum, I just haven't had a chance to visit with you yet, but I'm absolutely interested in having you participate. And we're just looking for advice. And again, the other thing someone asked me, well, is this a public meeting? I said, I don't know. It will be up to whether these invitees believe that is a productive way to proceed. And if they say, well, no, let's just meet privately and talk about it, I'm open to that too. So it's really just to try to figure out a way to work our way through this. And it's just not too early to start. Anything else? Senator, Mr. Watson does point out that we have a rule.
Rule
53.1 that says the Committee on Rules Administration shall adopt an operating budget for the Senate and post it on the web. Senator Senjum, would you be willing to offer this sheet as our
operating budget?
Even if you could.
Even if you were dedicated to this.
Even if you could, that's operations.
Chair, I would do that.
You could do it.
That's it's the one that says 10 and 11.
And you shouldn't do it.
I would move the sheet so handed out as the operating budget for 10 and 11 for the Minnesota Senate.
And we would post that, and we probably will also post that, the one that has the previous bieniums on it. We'll post that too, so people can look at it. And we are open to suggestions on how to open this process up. So this is just the beginning, members. We obviously want more input on this. So on the Senate motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Meeting adjourned.
What do you think is the Vermillion thing done?
No, I've got to meet with U.S. Steel again about it. They're pretty, them and the governor are really at odds. U.S. Steel's kind of upset with the governor over environmental permitting issues, so I don't think they're going to deal with it. But it'll have to be the next governor that does that.
Well, I still think that Henry Sibley left a chest of
selling anyway, which is fortunate because they couldn't afford development if they wanted to.
You're getting pretty skinny.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah.
Good
weather.
Yeah.
Okay. Sometimes it's not so bad when you're on vacation. Okay, now I don't feel so bad.
In the barn?
Yeah.
Farm life is good for you, huh?
It hasn't gotten back to me yet.
I can tell the difference. I'm 71 now. And I'm like, come in and sit down.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that true?